Namaskar.
Bienvenue.
I'm from Bangalore, India.
Dublin, Ireland.
Turkey.
The Philippines.
This is Feet in Two Worlds.
I came here to study.
To work. To volunteer.
Build a life of my own.
Welcome to Feet in Two Worlds.
Esto es Con los Pies en Dos Mundos.
Bir ayağım burada, bir ayağım orada yaşıyorum.
Welcome to Feet in Two Worlds.
It's a lesson that kids learn at an early age. If you want to succeed in the global economy, you'd better learn to speak Chinese.
When I go to work, when I grow up, right, if I know more languages my dad taught me, I get more money.
I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds. Mandarin Chinese is the new hot language in American schools. 10 years ago, only about 300 public and private schools in the U.S. offered classes in Mandarin. Now there are about 1,600 schools teaching Chinese. For years, it was mainly children in Chinese-American families that were learning Mandarin because their parents wanted them to be able to speak their native language. Now, there are lots of non-Chinese-Americans learning Mandarin. Here with me to talk about this explosion of Chinese language learning is Lan Trinh. She's a freelance TV producer and a Feet in Two Worlds education reporting fellow. Hi, Lan.
John, ni hao.
Ni hao. That's hello.
That's right. That's hello. Very good.
Thank you. Lan, you've spent time at two New York City public schools that have dual Mandarin English programs. And I guess there's a lot of competition to get into those schools.
Yes, they're really highly sought after because there's not that many schools in New York that offer dual language. There's only about a handful. So lots of kids commute, you know, from out of boroughs to go to these schools. And the two schools that I visit were PS20 in Lower Manhattan, and the other one is PS163 in Flushing. And they're both quite different. I mean, PS20 only has about 20% Chinese heritage kids, and the rest, most of them are Hispanic, whereas 163...
So lots of Hispanic kids.
Lots of Hispanic kids, yeah, and in the program
Chinese.
As well, right. At 163, it's about 70% Chinese because it's in Flushing and with a lot more recent immigrants. So the dual program there is mostly a lot of Chinese heritage kids.
So different challenges for each school in balancing the needs of kids who have grown up speaking English or Spanish and kids who have immigrated from China and speak Chinese as their first language.
Yes, I mean, it's all... as I was sitting there watching the teacher, you know, teach these kids is really challenging because you really have all different shades of fluency in Chinese and English. And even the Chinese kids, they don't necessarily speak Mandarin at home. So some of them are literally learning Mandarin also for the first time. You know, there's a lot of Fujianese kids. There's a lot of Cantonese kids. It's a really big mix of kids from different neighborhoods, different backgrounds, and different linguistic backgrounds, obviously.
Now, when it comes to language instruction for immigrants, the first job of the public schools is to teach them English. So how do the schools you visited balance out the need to give English instruction to kids who don't speak English or whose first language is not English, and this demand for instruction in Mandarin to prepare kids to be competitive in the global marketplace?
Well, first of all, both the schools that I visit feel really fortunate that they are even able to have this dual program. And that is largely because of the parents really, you know, fought for it with the school principals. Well, really demanded it from the schools. So in New York, because there is a large Chinese immigrant population, the parents have a choice. So if the school that they are zoned for does not have this program, they can put their kids in a different school zone that offers the Mandarin classes. So essentially, there's three options. There's ESL, which essentially a kid is taken out of, you know, the regular curriculum and then one class in ESL where they're just learning English.
That's English as a second language.
Mm-hmm. And then there's bilingual, which they take some courses in Mandarin, but the aim of bilingual is essentially to transition them to English. So using Mandarin to teach in a way to get them to be stronger in English, basically. But dual language, which is, you know, the schools that I visit, is the newest model, which the kids are spending one day learning all subjects in English and one day in Mandarin. And you have also a 50% mix of English speakers and 50% mix of Chinese speakers. So they're learning not just from the teachers, but from each other as well.
And the goal is that when they go through school, then they'll be fluent in both languages.
Right. And content knowledge, to stress that, so that they're not just learning languages, they're learning science, they're learning history, you know, they're learning computer studies, whatever, everything they're learning is in both languages.
So they can talk about geology as comfortably in Chinese as they can in English.
Right, so they can be a geologist in America or in China.
Now, for years, Chinese heritage kids, those are kids whose parents are Chinese, they may or may not speak Chinese at home or Mandarin at home, they've been studying Mandarin, weekend programs, after-school programs. Why is there now such a dramatic increase in demand for these dual language programs, and how are they different?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. Yes, a lot of the Chinese kids in America have been going to weekend schools for a while. A lot of kids that I've talked to, they basically don't like it. I mean, it's kind of a drag to have to get up very early on Saturday or Sunday, you know, after you've been in school for the whole week. And then depending on to what degree your parents speak it at home, you don't get that exposure the rest of the time. So to say you're sitting in a classroom for 3 or 4 hours a week, it really isn't enough, you know. And then I think the other shift is really now parents really want to get their children to be fluent in Mandarin so that they can have more career options in the future as China becomes a bigger global player and, you know, as the American economy becomes much more tied to China as we move on.
Now, you spoke to some parents at PS 163, and now that's the school in Queens, correct?
In Flushing, yeah.
Yeah. And tell us about them.
So that school, as I said, has about 70%, you know, Chinese students, and in that program, it was mostly heritage Chinese kids, and they have quite a few recent immigrant kids. Let's say if you have a son who's 10. On one hand, you really want your son to learn English as quickly as possible. But I think at the point now, a lot of parents would rather delay that a little at not the expense of losing the Chinese. So yeah, I spent a fair bit of time with the moms. In fact, they had a big annual dim sum. The whole entire school, like hundreds of them, all dressed up.
Sounds great.
It was chaos, actually. So I spoke with quite a few of the moms, and here's what one of them had to say.
And I'm very happy that they got this program because it's really going to help them down the line in the future, in the business world. You know, we're really gearing it to everything going to China and everything, and so I think it really will help her. And this is the best way to learn because I have a lot of friends who use, you know, take their kids to Chinese school in the weekends and stuff, and they go for 3, 4 years and 5 years and not much come out of it, and then they get bored and they don't want to deal with it.
That mom in particular speaks Cantonese at home. So, and there are some challenges even for Chinese heritage kids because they're learning Mandarin, and when they go home, they're not necessarily speaking Mandarin with their parents, you know, even though the writing is the same. So some of the kids are starting to teach their parents Mandarin, and quite a few, both the students and the parents, have mentioned to me that one of the concerns as they progress in the grades, homework becomes an issue because the parents really can't help them with their homework. So,
in addition to the two schools that you visited that are offering dual language, how many schools in the New York City public school system are offering this system of teaching Mandarin and English?
6 or 7.
And demand for these programs exceeds the 6 or 7?
Oh, my goodness. All of them, you know, all the school administrators tell me that there's not enough space for the classes. And a lot of the parents, a lot of non-Chinese are also wanting to be in the program.
Now, with budget cuts, some schools have had to actually cut their foreign language classes. But about a year and a half ago, the Chinese government stepped in and began offering grants to U.S. schools, both public and private, to pay for Mandarin instruction. It's a pretty stunning development at so many different levels. Are the schools taking the money?
Oh, my gosh, you bet. They're all, like, really, really applying to get the grants, and it's very, very competitive. I mean, like, for example, PS20 also applied, but they didn't get it. They don't tell you why.
That's the school in Lower Manhattan.
That's the school in Lower Manhattan, right. You know, for some schools, this is the only way for them to even have a language program or to teach Mandarin. So, but through the Asia Society, who works with Hanban.
And Hanban is the actual name of the Chinese government initiative?
Yes, as part of the education, the Ministry of Education, part of the Chinese government. Through the Asia Society, they have already given grants to more than 60 schools in 23 states. And their goal is to reach 100 schools by the end of the year.
So, Lan, how much money is the Chinese government spending on this initiative? And is the Asia Society the only organization in the U.S. that is handing out the money that comes from the Chinese government?
Well, it's really hard to know how big the total budget is because Hanban also works with other U.S. academic institutions like the University of Maryland and Florida. So, no, Asia Society is not the only institution that works with Hanban. But they seem to... They're the largest facilitator for kindergarten to 12th grade. And I had the opportunity to talk to Chris Livasari, who is the Associate Director of Education and Chinese Language Initiatives at the Asia Society, about their Mandarin program called Confucius Classroom. And this is what he had to say about the relationship with Hanban.
I mean, Hanban has been very good about, I think, acknowledging that they don't know as much about the American educational system. And so in terms of making decisions about how to interact with schools or how schools should be building programs, I mean, they leave that very much to us. And I think China, as it takes its place on the world stage, I think they're increasingly feeling the need to reach out to the rest of the world and help the rest of the world to understand them.
Now, Lan, I know you also tried to interview someone from Hanban about their program, but you didn't get anywhere. What happened? Why are they funneling the money through third party? Are they trying to hide something?
First of all, I did try to reach the education department at the Chinese consulate in New York, as well as the embassy in D.C., but nobody ever called me back. So I would still love to talk to somebody from Hanban, you know, just to get their perspective on this. But I think as you heard from Chris, I think what he says, you know, to me sounds like a good assessment of why China is spending money educating Americans, that they feel they've been isolated for a very long time. They feel the world doesn't understand them as well as they would like them to. And they've reached a certain point in their political and economic development that it's time to say, well, hey, you know, this is who we are. We've been learning English for a very long time now. And, you know, it's time for you to start sort of learning our language.
You visited a public school in Lower Manhattan that is a recipient of a Hanban grant. And so tell us a little bit about the school and what they did to successfully receive that grant.
The school that I visited is the Henry Street International School, which is near East Broadway. I don't know if you're familiar with that area. So there's huge Fujianese population in that section of Chinatown. However, that school only has about 10% Chinese heritage students, so which is kind of interesting considering its location. A few things that the Confucius Classroom looks for, which is diversity in school, and schools that already had a Mandarin program in place, as well as sort of a vision, as they put it, a vision for language program to build globally competent kids, you know, who are going to grow up. So it's not just to be learning a second language, but to learn to be globally minded and to be sort of ambassadors for China and U.S. in the future.
Now, one of the people you spoke with is a teacher who actually came from China to the U.S. to teach Chinese to American students.
Ms. Guo, she got the scholarship in Shanghai from Hanban to become a teacher, and then she got certified at NYU. So it's like it's a whole process that Hanban is not just giving money to schools here, but they also train teachers in China to come here to teach American kids.
It sounds like so many foreign aid programs that the U.S. has had over the years.
Like the Fulbright.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Chris had mentioned that, in fact, that, you know, well, some people might be a little suspicious of why the Chinese government is doing this. I mean, what he was saying, it really isn't that different from what the U.S. and like the Goethe Institute for German, you know, has done in the past. The grant made a huge difference at this school, and a lot more parents now want to put their kids in the program. So this is what Ms. Guo told me.
I called some of the parents. They were actually telling me, saying, like, my kids are not Chinese. Why would they learn Chinese? And I often hearing the question from students saying, like, Miss, I mean, never used Chinese in my entire life. Why am I learning Chinese here? But after the community building and also like celebrations and the opportunity for students going to China, that really connected students, make a lot of students think, it actually might be a chance for them to use Chinese. So I got a lot more students telling me that they want to learn Chinese now.
Yeah, so that was Ms. Guo telling us about the huge difference that the grant has made. As a recipient of the grant, the school gets $10,000 a year. They get teacher training, the teachers go to conferences, and one of the most important things, they get partner up with a school in China. So the kids will exchange emails with students in China, and then some of them will actually get to go and spend a summer in China. And now for this particular school, the Henry Street International School, a lot of these kids, Ms. Guo is telling me, have never been beyond New York, and some of them have never even been in Chinatown. So the fact that they make a field trip to Chinatown, considering their school was like a few blocks away, and these kids were just stunned by like all the Chinese activities that they were seeing and the language they were hearing.
So this program has really been a catalyst at the school to change things.
Yes, and you know, I also asked Ms. Guo the same question of why, being that she's come out of this whole Hanban system, of why she thinks the Chinese government is investing so much money educating students overseas. And, you know, she was telling me that she's often shocked of how little her kids know about other countries. And here's what she told me.
In China, people know about the United States, but from the American side, from the communication with my students, quite a lot of students, they don't know about China. I had a question asking the students that what's the majority ethnic in China? And they gave me Japanese. And when I asked what's the capital city in China, they said Tokyo.
So a lot of misinformation among young school students in the U.S. about China.
Yep. I mean, they get Korea, Japan, China all lumped together. I mean, not saying that's every kid, but, you know, a lot of her students have that confusion.
So looking back on your own experience of being immersed in English and American culture, what do you take away from seeing the Hanban program and this demand for dual language Mandarin English programs in New York City public schools?
When I first came to the States, I went to suburban Houston, Texas, and not New York City. So it's quite a different landscape than New York City. Yeah, and I came here with barely knowing the English alphabet. So because of the environment that I was in, I had no options, you know, but to be enrolled in ESL, which I gladly did. And I think because I was just completely immersed in an English environment, I learned really quickly. But at the same time, when I look at these kids who in New York, the schools that I visit, the fact that they have the option to learn a different language, and I mean, Chinese is a very different language from English, you know, and that they get to develop.
Yes, it is, having made some feeble attempts myself to learn it. So,
but I think it's really great that kids have this opportunity because I think we live in a very different world now than we did 20 years ago, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And the world is only going to get smaller in that way. And China is only going to become a much more significant part of our lives. And I think for most of these kids, the U.S.-China relationship is probably the most important political and economic relationship that's going to shape their future. Now, on the different note, as an immigrant, I also see sort of the pressure to assimilate now. It's a little bit less. I mean, I think Americans are a bit more embracing of other people's culture and language so that, you know, a kid can become an American without having to ditch all of his native language and his culture and their customs, which is in a way what I had to do when I came to Houston, you know.
Except I want to push back a little bit because now you speak perfect English, but you also speak Mandarin and a couple
Cantonese,
of Cantonese
and Vietnamese.
And some
German.
So it's not as if You lost that through the process of assimilating to American culture and to an English language environment. So I just wonder if some of these fears about people losing their cultural heritage and their linguistic heritage are a little bit overblown.
Well, I think it really depends on the family, because my parents, well, my mother to this day does not speak English. So I had no choice but to really keep up. I knew that I wanted to work in media. You know, when I was in university, I put myself through many years of Chinese studies, and then I moved to Asia. So that made a huge difference. So I think it's each, the preference is different. But I certainly feel when I was a kid, the pressure to assimilate was much, much greater in a place like Houston, like than it is in New York. But, you know, I'm really hopeful that, and I'm really glad that these kids have all these opportunities to study a new language and possibly go to China, and hopefully their world is that much wider and the possibilities that much more infinite because of that.
Going back to the specific programs that are in the schools, what are the challenges that they face now? Obviously, as you've said, there's more demand for these programs than the schools are able to meet. But beyond that, is there a point where these programs are going to be tested or evaluated? And is there some kind of a hurdle that they have to overcome to really demonstrate their effectiveness?
Well, there's a lot of challenges, funding being the major one. So all these kids that I talked to and the teachers, none of them know how much longer they're going to be able to continue the program. So that's one. And then finding qualified teachers is also really challenging. The curriculum, there's nothing that's standardized. Like we don't know, you know, we don't know our kids really coming out of this equally as strong in content knowledge as a kid who's just going through the regular English. But the parents and the teachers and everybody, it's really, really wants this to continue.
They're convinced that this is the
right
thing.
They're convinced that this is going to sharpen their minds, not just linguistically, but it will make them sort of smarter in other subjects as well and become global citizens.
Lan, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You should say xie xie.
Xie xie. Lan Trinh is a freelance TV producer and a Feet in Two Worlds Education Reporting Fellow. The producers for this segment are Sarah Kate Kramer, Jocelyn Gonzalez, and Dimple Patel. Our engineer is Bill O'Neill. Special thanks to WNYC. I'm John Rudolph. Thanks for listening.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the New York Community Trust and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, with additional support from the Mertz Gilmore Foundation and the Cyrus Fund. This program was produced in association with the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and CUNY TV. Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. We are a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Visit our website at news.feetintoworlds.org.